Welcome to episode 13 of the Big Bald Broadcast, a podcast dedicated to all things geeky, with your hosts, Kyle Hebert and Otherworld Steve. Kyle is a professional voice actor, heard on such hit shows as Dragon Ball Z and Fullmetal Alchemist. Steve is a freelance journalist, with published articles featured in Beckett Anime Collector, Anime Insider, and more. He is also the webmaster for KyleHebert.com. This week is a very special episode featuring a movie-length commentary track for Star Wars Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith. Obviously, to get the full effect, you'll need a copy of the DVD. How can a podcast commentary work? Simple! Cue up your Star Wars DVD to Chapter 3, which is the beginning of the film after the opening title scroll, and hit pause on your remote. Wait for the sound of the Jawa, then hit play. After that, kick back and enjoy the show! Get ready to get your Sith on, because here comes that Jawa!
Welcome to the commentary for Episode 3. Now, we're going to do something a little different, because we had nothing to do with making this movie, but we're big Star Wars fans, and we just want to talk about some of the key scenes. In other words, like the big action sequences, and kind of how we feel about the prequels and whatnot. And here we are on the opening shot, which is mighty, mighty cool.
This is absolutely beautiful. You know, for this to be the first glimpse of the film, I think it's really powerful, really invoking of what Star Wars is all about.
Yeah, it's certainly the most exciting opening of the prequels, and it's a direct tie-in to the end of the Clone Wars animated series. That one ends with this space scene here, and then this movie opens with it, so it's a real nice tie-in.
And the scale of this opening is just, it's beyond comprehension. There's just so much going on.
Something that you can learn by watching the 2-hour documentary on this disc is that there is so many cogs in the wheel, so many different departments to make just 1 minute of screen time on this movie, and it's really just exhausting, literally. I mean, you almost want to just shut it off and say, okay, come on, that's it, right? Only 200,000 people worked on this. No, it's literally just really, really all-encompassing.
Certainly brings a new respect to the end credits of the film.
Oh, yeah, dude. We know when you go to a movie, especially like Star Wars, and you know you're going to sit through 10 or 15 minutes of credits, you really owe it to these guys. They have poured their hearts and souls into this stuff. George Lucas, yeah, he's the mastermind and all, but he's basically the guy with his big stamp that says approve on it. And the artists come up with all these out-of-this-world ideas, and he either stamps it approve or he chunks it in the trash. So while a lot of people will credit Lucas, I really do credit his team for really building the look of these films.
You know, one aspect I'm really compelled to bring up is the headsets that Obi-Wan and Anakin are wearing. And you see that bronze bar going across the head. It doesn't look very comfortable. You would think with all that technology that they have, that there'd be some kind of padding or something, because, you know, they must be getting rashes from wearing those.
Yeah, I mean, here in this year, you know, have they not heard of Bluetooth? I mean, I know it's a long time ago, but, you know, we can wear headsets that are a lot less bulky and cumbersome.
But boy, it sure looks pretty.
It does. It does. And it doesn't really have to make sense. It's sci-fi, after all. It doesn't really have to be practical. That's not really what Star Wars is about. And if you have a surround sound system at home, this will give it a workout. I mean, any time a Star Wars movie comes out, it becomes the reference disc for your home theater to show off to all your friends.
Oh, especially a film like this where if you have the DVD, you're watching the direct digital transfer. You know, this is straight off the computers at ILM.
Yeah, much like Pixar, except, I mean, this is just so vivid, and I still to this day can't get over how film-like and cinematic it looks. I mean, because in the end, it really is video. I mean, they shot this direct to tape on the set, just like you would at home with a video camera, except it's a far more expensive version of it.
Looks a lot better than my bootleg, I'll tell you that.
Oh, yeah, this definitely is superior to the ones that were downloaded. It's like, do you remember, Steve, how much time they dished out to that one dude who was prosecuted for the BitTorrent of this?
I don't recall, but I know that they served charges to like four other people involved.
Yeah, and was that guy actually an ILM employee or a Lucasfilm employee?
I guess technically, yes. He was in charge of cutting the scenes up for promo spots. So he had access to the entire film and decided to make it available to the public.
Yeah, that's something you see and just salivate when you watch the documentary. You see the footage of these guys who have access to every take on film. They have it digitized into computers for reference. And they literally have the power to, you know, to feed the fans what they want on BitTorrent. They could throw the outtakes on there. I'm really surprised in this day and age that more footage wasn't leaked out.
You know, it's really interesting because, you know, prior to us starting this, prior to starting our, it's going to be like editing this. Prior to starting this, I was over on StarWars.com, and they were talking about how a lot of people were popping the disc into their computers, and they were seeing the name Charlotte for the DVD. A lot of people were like, wait a minute, I thought I bought Star Wars. Why does it say Charlotte? And then you go over to StarWars.com, and it's a big explanation about how they have to use code words when they send these things in to get mastered, because they don't want people to know that this is being mastered onto DVD because they were afraid of leaks. So they're only doing that with the first pressing. When they go to make more copies, they'll no longer be called Charlotte, so you can guarantee that you have a first pressing, and who knows, it might end up being a collector's item.
Oh, we like that. That kind of reminds me of back when they were shooting Return of the Jedi and called it Blue Harvest.
Exactly.
And here's a really cool scene where they, you know, literally jump out of their fighters and are just slashing and killing these droids left and right. And what I really like about the fact that they're droids is it's kind of Lucas's excuse for multiple amputations on a massive scale. So many beheadings and limbs flying every which way, but it doesn't matter because they're droids.
Yeah, robots don't bleed.
And you can argue creatively. It's like, okay, this is it's an intense scene. It's a great beginning. And then, you know, you go back and forth between serious, cool, intense, and ludicrous, silly dialogue with the robots going, uh-oh, you know.
And then you get to meet the badass of the scene, General Grievous.
Complete with emphysema.
It's a smoker's cough.
It truly is. I like that guy. Now, I couldn't remember for the life of me, and I watched the Clone Wars. It's like, now, did he get that cough from fighting with the Jedi?
He did. That was Mace Windu's final attack, escaping the general's assassination. His final attack was to crush in his robot ribcage.
Man, and I call myself a fan. I should have known that, but I always just found it hysterical. And, I mean, I remember seeing this in the theater in a packed house in Los Angeles, and everyone was just snickering as soon as he started coughing. It's like, wait a minute, he's a robot. Why is he coughing?
But I guess, well, you know, that's more of Lucas's backward logic to hurry up and get the movie out and to wait another, you know, 2 to 3 weeks before the Clone Wars Volume 2 DVD comes out. I think that Clone Wars should have come out first, give people the opportunity to watch it if they hadn't seen it, or if you had seen it, to refresh your memory, and then be able to pop the Star Wars movie in right after and really get that complete experience.
Yes. This elevator scene kind of reminds me of Die Hard.
This is kind of where, like, the bad dialogue starts.
Yeah, it kicks in, and you just want to go, wah, 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 wah.
But, you know, I guess that's been a complaint with all of the actors of the prequel trilogy about how difficult it is when you're acting up against a green screen or a blue screen and you don't have, you know, other actors to correspond with.
Yeah, I know that's been one of Ewan McGregor's biggest complaints about it. And as far as dialogue goes, I think Christopher Lee said it best. He said it's not Shakespeare. It was never pretending to be. You know, it's just as silly and cheesy and over the top as the serials that Lucas was meaning to pay homage to. Just with much better effects.
Oh, much.
Try watching Flash Gordon or Buck Rogers with Buster Crabbe, those old serials from the 30s and 40s now. I mean, I think even as a kid I watched and cracked up because I could see the strings holding the ships. R2 had a fine moment there. He didn't have as many fine moments in the original trilogy, which is ironic.
Well, so I guess you attribute that to, you know, the character development.
He devolved. Yeah, right? He could fly and do all this cool stuff in the old, you know, times, which is the prequel trilogy, and then suddenly, you know, he's just cute.
It always cracks me up to see how laid back everybody is in this moment of impending doom, you know? They're just kind of chilling, kind of just whispering, very, very relaxed.
That's Lucas for you. You know, holding back the acting. Just say, here, stand here and say it. No, more wooden, more wooden.
Yeah, there was too much emotion there. Pull back, pull back.
Yeah, shocking that they managed to get as much emotion as they did, you know, in the latter half of the film. And this is a nice little lightsaber duel. You know, obviously, I guess they stuck Christopher Lee's face on the double there because he's a little bit old to be doing those kind of moves. But he doesn't have much to say. Then again, he doesn't last long either.
Which is really a disappointment.
Yeah, because, you know, his old protege, Peter Cushing, had such a great role as Tarkin in the old movie, and certainly casting him was a big nod to using those great Hammer horror film classic actors.
Now, that's probably one of the most made fun of films, scenes in the film, Ragdoll Obi-Wan.
They should have made a plushie of him or something, Ragdoll Obi-Wan.
But yeah, I think this is what everybody really wants to see, you know, is a saber battle, and to see one within, you know, mere minutes of the opening is really, really cool.
Yeah, this really does seem like it's an answer to all fans' criticisms of the other two movies. And it's like, wow, this really is, I mean, this should have been the prequel movie. I don't know if you really needed a prequel trilogy, but I mean, all the stakes are amped up, the energy level, the action scenes, the effects.
Now, you know, again, let me be really critical. Another scene that really, I don't know, it leaves me dumbfounded. Here's Dooku ready to be assassinated by Anakin, and he has nothing to say to Palpatine. Not, you know, thanks for screwing me over. Thanks for throwing me to the wolves.
Yeah, I mean, he's strangely silent. He emotes quite well in his look. He's like, oh, woe is me. You almost feel sorry for him. But, yeah, no pomp and circumstance. He just goes out quiet. But, yeah, that's a nice first glimpse of Anakin's dark side. Good old Ian McDermott.
A little
McDermott
late to be
here.
Thinking about that, isn't it?
Yeah. Ian McDermott here, of course, you know, he's just hamming it up in this role, and he's really, really taking the dialogue off the page and bringing it to life. I mean, what an amazing performance in this movie. I just love it.
I've heard a lot of critics say that they only wish he brought that kind of performance to Return of the Jedi.
Right. Yeah, if anything, you could say that the pinnacle of his performance was actually in this movie and instead. But it's kind of weird when you do a trilogy out of sequence, you know?
But I think the weight of this film was really there. I think they knew that they really had to get it right being the last one. You really had to appease the fans. You really had to bring your best to the table.
And it's something that I think all Star Wars fans have wanted to see since 77. You said, we want to see Anakin go bad. And, I mean, I can kind of understand to a point. It's like, he wanted to show him as a boy, starting off purely innocent and all that. Okay, it's like, well, we could have really honestly included the events of 1 and 2 into 3, you know?
Oh, agreed. I mean, within 20 minutes, you could have had all of the backstory.
But instead, we got Jar Jar.
I shudder.
Ooh, Misa, so annoying! Yeah. Well, at least Lucas heard the fans and put less of them in 2, and even less of them in this one. So yay for the small victories. Of course, something with Jar Jar in 2, you traded out the annoying factor with 3PO. Suddenly 3PO became the annoying factor again.
Lucas and his, you know, demand to inject comic relief into these films.
Yep. It's kind of like when Disney starts to go dark. They never take it too dark. They're almost afraid to take that leap off the edge. You know, they don't want to offend any family sensibilities or anything, or really inject some realism.
And it was a leap for this film to be rated PG-13, and I only imagine what it could have been if you would have pushed the envelope to an R rating.
Oh, yeah, unbelievable. You actually probably would have seen the poor little kids getting sliced apart as abundantly as you do the droids in this movie. So, yeah, there you go. Big stack here, and out comes R2. I like Grievous. I really do. I have one 12-inch figure from Revenge of the Sith, and it's Grievous, and I really, really like him.
It's just really unfortunate, because in the scheme of things, he is just a throwaway character.
Yep.
There really wasn't a proper introduction. My gripe was that Grievous should have been introduced in Episode 2 at some point, even if it was a brief cameo, just to give you some backstory to the character, because he is a real powerful character, and he could have been so much more.
Yeah, and I guess they took him the Boba Fett route and introduced him in animated style first with the Clone Wars, the second season. And I guess at this point there would have been, or at somewhere around these minutes here, as they're being taken to Grievous, you would have seen Shaak Ti's deleted scene where he kills her. And I was like, well, that was an interesting scene. And it's on the disc, so check that out.
Watching the deleted scenes, it amazes me at the time and effort and energy that Lucas put into these scenes to, you know, have them end up on the cutting room floor in the end. Especially when you watch the documentary and you see how many tens of thousands of people are involved in bringing a scene to life.
And you have to think, in this day and age, it's probably true of any studio, when a film is hitting the theatrical release, they're already putting together the documentary features, and especially on a film as technically advanced as Star Wars, they're really, you know, probably just going at it 24/7.
It's just constant action, saber battle after saber battle.
We like that. You don't need this silly lovey-dovey crap. It had to be... I'm assuming that Ewan and Hayden are actually fighting probably, you know, stunt people who got removed, and they got the total CG robots there instead.
That would be my assumption. Big, burly men in green suits.
Yeah. Only to be removed later. Oh, the agony. Kind of makes me feel sorry for all the Jedis and senators and stuff in the cutscenes of the movie. I mean, at least they got seen, but they didn't end up, you know, on a theatrical release.
Well, I'm sure they got paid.
Well, yeah, in the end, you're an actor, and you want to work, and you got to eat. So, yeah, when the checks come in, that's a good thing.
This is a really cool scene of Grievous with his grappling hook. It just really brings out that Boba Fett-type badass element.
Oh, yeah, and he's got some cool moves coming up later in the flick that we're going to talk about, too. It's a really well-done scene. I really wonder if... I've often thought this, you know, if you took a theater-going crowd from the 1930s and were able to time travel and actually show them this movie, you know, what kind of effect would that have on an audience to see something like this in 1930-something?
They would probably assume they're watching a documentary, something that's absolutely real.
Yeah. In a time where even computers don't exist or something, you know, you had, you know, Metropolis being the most advanced looking movie.
Oh, more crappy dialogue.
Oh yeah, especially when they get to land, and we just have to have Kenobi just with that little quip. But still, this looks brilliant. Looks really, really good here. It's another great show-off point for your friends on the surround sound.
Oh, I was just going to say, exactly. You know, you couple the digital imaging with the surround sound, it's just an amazing, amazing experience. It's something we had discussed in an earlier podcast. You're almost better off watching it at home, where you can watch it in a more quiet environment, more laid back.
Yeah, as we continue to evolve into a more internet-based society, and entertainment is, you know, now being distributed, you know, with the iPod video and whatnot, you know, where a theatrical release is going to be in the future. I guess at the end, everyone's just going to lose their job, you know? <It's> like, they can't serve popcorn anymore because no one's coming to the theaters anymore. Everyone just makes DVDs and waits for them. I wish Star Tours were like this at Disney World.
Maybe someday.
Yeah. That ride was rumored to be upgraded ever since The Phantom Menace and still hasn't. But, you know, he had movies to make. What can you say? Yes, another happy landing.
Oh, look, the Millennium Falcon.
That's right. Look close. There it is. See?
Yay! Now, one would assume that that's Lando piloting it.
Ooh, yeah, I guess he originally owned it. And what, Han won it in a card game?
He did. Although Lando would dispute that he was swindled out of it.
He's a no-good swindler.
After all they've been through, their clothing looks quite immaculate.
It looks really good, and especially considering that if you watch the two-hour documentary on the wardrobe department, they talk about how they have differing degrees of battle damage in both of their outfits. And they even have close-ups of it. I mean, it's especially noticeable for the Mustafar duel. But not so much here. They look like they just went to Target, picked it up.
Our favorite Gungan.
Samuel Jackson, once again, completely wasted. I can't decide if it's because of the dialogue or just because he's just not right for it. I don't know. How do you feel about Mace Windu?
I would say both. I would think that it's both inappropriate casting and crappy dialogue.
Yeah. We all know it's doable to turn crappy dialogue into something truly entertaining, you know, vis-a-vis Ian McDiarmid. But, you know, you got Sam Jackson, who is a great actor, but he just feels so out of his element here.
Well, you know, that was one thing I was really proud of with the classic trilogy, is that Lucas really went out of his way to cast a lot of relative unknowns. And then with the prequel trilogy, to bring in these familiar faces, to bring in Sam Jackson, Jimmy Smits, and everybody, it kind of does pull you out of the element of the movie at times.
Well, at least Hayden wasn't Leonardo DiCaprio. But I don't know. I mean, Leo could probably bring a better performance. Ah, yes, close-ups of pretty people. Oh, just look at them. Come on, Star this Wars fans. Do you buy the romance for 1 minute, guys? No.
Not for a second.
But Natalie's a babe. No denying. I'm sure the girls are just crazy about Hayden, too.
Are you kidding? I'm crazy about Hayden.
Are ya?
Oh, look at him.
Love that little shag haircut and everything. In some scenes in this movie, it looks like a wig. Looks natural here, though.
Well, you know, it's understandable because they wanted to tie that link between this movie and Episode 4 and to give him that very dated 70s-style haircut.
Oh, it works.
You know, the same thing here with Natalie and the buns.
Yep. I love Natalie's buns. Oh, I mean the hairdo. Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Aww. Oh, yes. So anyway, meanwhile, on the other side of the universe...
A planet that isn't entirely composed of sand. Oh, wait, it is.
Darn. I thought we were going to like a lime green Slurpee planet. What is the name of this planet?
The name escapes me.
Ah, me
but
too.
But it sure is pretty.
It is pretty. And again, another testament to the ILM artists and everybody who came up with these ideas. And Lucas goes, yeah, that looks good. Let's use it.
Yeah, because again, the ILM team should really be credited for the efforts because a lot of this is envisioned by them, not by George, and they bring it to George, and like you mentioned earlier, he just stamps his approval on it. A lot of this, you know, it's imagined up by them.
And then they kind of work together at their little staff meetings. He'll say, okay, well, this looks good, but why don't we do this? And then they'll go back and redesign stuff and come back a few weeks later, and it's like, how's this? Okay, that looks great. Let's use it.
And again, if you watch the documentary on the second disc, you'll actually see Lucas rewriting the script to this movie because of some of the design that ILM came up with.
And that's proof right there that you owe so much of what you see to the unseen thousands, literally thousands of people who worked on this. I mean, hats off. I mean, really.
I just want to know how many people who are Star Wars fans and really enjoyed particularly the prequel trilogy, you know, how many of them did not know that Palpatine was Sidious? Yeah. I'm sure there must have been a few.
Yes, the conspiracy theorists were abounds. But what I really want to know is, does she not have anything better to do than comb her hair?
Apparently not. And, you know, it's not getting rid of the curls, so I don't know what she's doing.
This scene, she comes across like she's channeling Kirsten Dunst from Spider-Man. She seems so Mary Jane in this scene. And, of course, the dialogue is just...
And for me, it just seems really out of character because she's somebody who, you know, is portrayed as this really independent, strong person. And they really girlied her out in this movie and, like, kind of dumbed her down quite a bit.
Yeah, she got kind of wussified, kind of like Morpheus in The Matrix.
Oh, let's not even go there.
I'm so in love with you. No, I'm so in love with you. I'm rubber, you're glue.
Look, Force Vision, now in 3D.
It's coming at you. And it will be. Well, the old trilogy will at some point, yeah. Gratuitous chest shot.
My heart's a flutter. Although I do like seeing the metal arm. That is pretty badass.
Absolutely. He is Full Metal Alchemist.
He is.
He's Anakin Elric.
Yes. The Force, alchemy, it's all paralleled.
I wonder, does he wax his chest hair because it sure is baby smooth?
It looks really glossy.
I think
the costume department must have had a blast with that.
Oh, it's a lovely night in New York, Upper Manhattan.
No, the dialogue. No, I fear the dialogue.
No, they're going to talk. No, don't talk. Please don't talk.
Damn it, she's talking. Somebody shut her up.
God. He's talking too. Do you remember that from the second movie, this necklace thing? Because I don't.
Actually, it's from the first movie.
Really?
Yeah, when they were traveling to Naboo, Coruscant, traveling somewhere, from somewhere, he gave it to her.
Oh, wow.
Which I thought was really funny because he was like 9 and he was all hot for her.
And she goes, "You so don't have a chance with me, little kid."
But see, whining and bitching and complaining does pay off in the end.
I guess so. Because Annie is so wizard.
But in the real world, that's like so not how you get the girl.
No. I wonder how far along she's supposed to be because, you know, she's already told him she's pregnant and she's already looking like she's showing a bit.
I was thinking more so that every time Hayden wants to evoke any type of emotion, it looks like he almost wants to laugh. Like even he knows how cheesy the dialogue is.
You have to wonder how many times or how many takes, and you don't see it because it's on the cutting room floor, but him like winking at the camera. Or maybe both of them just busting up. And didn't Lucas just come forth and admit at some Hollywood function or something and says, "Oh, I'm the king of wooden dialogue" or something?
Yeah, but, you know, again, I can't say it enough. It sure does look pretty.
It does. It's beautiful. And you have to wonder, now that you see, you know, a little CG Yoda here, does Frank Oz or any of the Muppet clan take any offense? Or are they threatened? Do they feel threatened by CG at all, you know?
Well, again, you know, I just read an interview with Frank Oz recently, and he was really adamant in reminding people that providing the voice for Yoda was only 10% of his job in the classic trilogy, Empire and Jedi in particular. You know, he said manipulating the puppet was 90% of his job, and he's really proud of the work that he did. So I guess he, you know, may feel slighted where in the prequels he only did 10% of what he, you know, could have done.
Yeah, and I think Anthony Daniels, the same in regards to at least, you know, episode 1 and parts of episode 2, he was reduced to just a voiceover artist, basically. So I'm sure that was a much smaller payday.
And I know in episode 2, because of the CG Yoda, Frank Oz didn't even report to Skywalker Ranch to do his voice role. He was in London at the time, and it was all done via teleconferencing. And if you watch the making of episode 2, you actually get to see some scenes of him doing his voiceover in a booth in London while Lucas is in California.
Ah, very cool. And, yeah, that kind of reminds me, on disc 2, on the documentary, the 2-hour documentary, you get to see Hayden do looping, which is where you re-record dialogue or sounds that, you know, on the set were not usable because, you know, they're clashing their sticks together, which will be replaced by lightsabers and special effects and all that, or wind noise or whatnot. They do this on movies and TV shows. It's very, very close to what anime dubbing's like. Knowing that, 99.9% of this film is special effects, how much of this set are they actually walking on? You start to question. It's like, is any of this set real? Is every single wall not there?
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, before the film came out, and they had the set diaries and some webcam photos for Hyperspace members of StarWars.com, you would see, like, a portion of a doorway, and everything else is painted green. I mean, here at Palpatine's office, you know that the doorway and the walkway they're on now are real, but I think everything over to the left is just all CG. Everything through the window certainly is.
Yeah.
He certainly sounds overwhelmed.
Completely overwhelmed. I'm cunning and manipulative. Can you tell? Because why, kids? He's British.
I will give Lucas credit, though, or the art department, because they really know how to use that balance of light and shadows. It really, you know, brings a depth to the movie.
Oh, yeah. Hey, Ki Adi Mundi's not there in person. What's up with that? He's all hologram.
You know, it's really funny because you see a scene like that, and the explanation could be something as simple as he wasn't available to make it on the set that day. That had happened with the senator from Naboo in episode 2, and that was literally the reason why they had to show him in hologram form, because he could not make it to the set. So they had him come in months later, and they filmed him behind a green screen and then just had him in hologram form.
I think this is the first time in the prequel trilogy in the Jedi Council chamber where the skies are actually blue. It looks like a real sky.
And again, really cool to see the element to show that, yes, the weather does change on Coruscant. And of course, all the geeky fanboys out there, I'm sure, are paying particular attention to all the ships passing by, you know, with having heard the rumors of flying Budweiser bottles in episode 1.
Oh, yeah. You know, special effects houses love to put little in-jokes in there. The guys who do Battlestar Galactica also did Firefly, so they stuck the Firefly ship Serenity into the Battlestar Galactica miniseries in a real quick scene, kind of like, you know, the Bud Light thing in episode 1 or whatever. Talking dialogue angst. Angst talking dialogue.
Can you feel the intensity?
Absolutely. I feel it in my bones.
I've noticed that a lot of the dialogue, they're in relative close proximity to each other. And I'm wondering, you know, are they using breath mints or some sort of, you know, mouthwash, breath spray?
That'd be an interesting statistic to find out, and this sounds like something that would end up on dig.com. You know, how many gallons of hairspray did they go through? How many bottles of deodorant? And
yeah, because you got to remember, they're working under studio lights, and, you know, from being on stage as a musician, stage lights are very hot. And you got these guys wrapped in robes. You've got makeup on, you've got a ton of hair gel and mousse and hairspray. You got to get quite warm pretty quick.
It's probably a meat locker compared to them shooting in Tunisia for the Tatooine stuff, though.
True.
And, you know, you can witness that, at least secondhand, as a viewer, you know, when you watch the best of the prequel documentaries, in my opinion, which is The Phantom Menace. That documentary is not only far superior to the film, but it's like just an amazing slice of what it takes to make a movie.
It is probably the closest thing you're going to see as far as a definitive documentary for a while.
And I could, and you brought this up the other day, Steve. We were talking and you were saying, okay, while the documentary on this disc does make you appreciate all the behind-the-scenes folks that you don't, you know, see, you know, all the movie stars get the lights, oh, what was my point? I just lost it. I was watching Yoda comb his hair.
because his hair did look phenomenal. I mean,
oh, absolutely.
That was awesome.
I wish he would have gone for a mohawk do.
Punk him out a little bit.
Totally.
Or something.
Let's punk the little green guy out. Come on, he deserves it. You know he's got the moves. Can you see him in a mosh pit?
Well, we've seen him as a rapper.
That's right, kids. The Easter egg on the disc, in case you don't know, you go to the options menu and highlight the THX logo. Type in 1138 on your remote, and you'll see Yoda do some hip-hop action.
As I exhibit my General Grievous cough. Lung cookies.
Okay, here's what I was talking about. Here's where the hair looks like a wig.
They're talking again.
I know, they're talking again. They need to stop that.
I totally dig her rugby helmet, though.
Oh, yeah, she's ready to get out on the field. For sure. Either that or get behind the wings of a plane or something. Pilot to Bombardier! Pilot to Bombardier! This is the big anti-war statement. We should
don't
talk
ask
it
me.
Over.
Look how mad I am now.
That's right. Hey, I'm emoting. You know how mad I am? I'm going to stand up and walk away. That's how mad I am. Oh, yes. Hold me like you...
Gee, she totally appreciates his chest. She's all rubbing it. Ooh.
Yep.
You know, I think she's getting all pissy about this war. What is she really doing? She's hiding out, not telling anybody she's pregnant.
Combing her hair.
She's got a lot of nerve.
Truly. Meanwhile, Anakin has time to go to the MGM hotel in Vegas.
You know, I was reading somebody's review of this movie, and I forget which website it's on. Well, on a side note, over to your left of your screen, the guy with the hat on with the tassels, that is George Lucas, and he's actually talking to his daughter.
Ooh, that's
where
he
is.
What
I was saying, though, they were paralleling the scene with something out of The Godfather, where, you know, you have the up-and-comer meeting with the Godfather at the opera. You know, how it just really parallels that theme, that trend, how it harkens back to an earlier day.
Mm-hmm. Well, Lucas and Coppola were brethren anyway, back at film school, I guess.
And there's your friend, Sly Moore.
Sandy Finlay, yeah, I got to meet her in Australia, at Sydney for a convention, and also in Wellington, New Zealand. Very, very cool. She also appeared in The Matrix Reloaded, but she was in that club scene, but I never did pick her out. I guess she was an extra. Was not a featured player, unfortunately, but a very, very nice lady.
Now, of course, for all the geeky fanboys out there, this is probably one of the most controversial scenes in all of the Star Wars movies, because you really don't know if what Palpatine is saying here is hogwash, or if it's the truth, or a meld of the two.
Yeah, this scene I really, really like, and again, it... Tip of the hat to Ian McDiarmid for really, really selling it.
And you know, he actually had some sort of pharynx infection when this scene was shot, and that's why he's very purposely being very soft-spoken.
Ooh. I thought that was a stylistic choice.
No, I'm just a wealth of nonsense information.
Well, they are at the opera, after all. I mean, I guess you would talk in a hushed fashion anyway, but... But, yeah, I really, really like this story about Darth Plagueis. And, yeah, of course, the midichlorian thing comes up, and he goes, oh, God, not that again.
And, you know, again, you know, part of the big debate is when he talks about being able to influence the midichlorians to create life, George Lucas has already come out and said he will never definitively answer the question about whether or not Palpatine created out Anakin. He said he's totally going to leave that up to the fans to make their own call on that. He's never going to answer that.
Man. I'm sure some fans are completely oblivious to that, but I know I am. I'm just dying to know, you know. And he hints at it, but it's just not conclusive.
Guess we'll never know.
No, I suppose not.
Although you are out in California now, and could probably take a drive over to Skywalker Ranch.
I'd love to, actually. I think that's not near L.A., though. I think it's closer to... I think it's further north.
At the least, stop off over at Skywalker Vineyard.
Oh, well, yeah.
They're still talking.
They're still talking about midichlorians and how it, is the best detergent out there to... Oh, I'm sorry, yeah. I always thought midichlorian sounds like either a breath mint or a detergent.
I certainly take the breath mint route.
Yeah, forget Mentos. Use midichlorian.
Are those Ian's real teeth, or are those prosthetic?
Well, I don't know. I know a lot of Australians and New Zealand people I met naturally had bad teeth. I can't speak for the British. Again, I'm knocking the British. I'm not meaning to knock the British, but, you know, the British are always, portrayed as villains in film. That's all I'm meaning. I like British people, really.
Unfortunately, it is a stereotype with the British that they have free health care, and it does not apply to dental.
No, it doesn't. And you get to see a little even further look in his mouth later when he starts to transform. And it's not pretty.
Ian has some bushy eyebrows.
He should get those waxed, I swear.
I mean, he should just look at Anakin's chest and realize bald is beautiful.
Bald really is beautiful. Now we're on lovely scenic Kashyyyk, where the water is as green as the trees.
Now, you and I were talking about this prior to us starting, about really what an utter waste of time these scenes were. they really didn't add anything to the film.
Beyond, oh look, it's Chewbacca. That's it.
And to me, that's just bull fan service. It's such a weak attempt at trying to tie everything together.
Yeah, I guess George kind of glossed over the fact that you don't have to tie everything together. You really don't.
The real important questions, like whether or not Palpatine created Anakin, get totally glossed over. But we need an excuse to put Chewbacca in this film.
Yeah, maybe Peter Mayhew was emailing him saying, "You know, I'm free this weekend. I could come show up."
Probably acquired some blackmail when filming the classic trilogy.
Maybe so, but
Peter Mayhew's hippie days.
Peter Mayhew is actually a very, very nice man. He's very tall, of course, and he has a lot of health problems. But he's a very, very nice guy.
And he just became a U.S. citizen.
Yes, he did.
And he harkens back to your ex-home state of Texas.
That's right. Lives on the outskirts of Dallas, in between Dallas and Fort Worth. And he appears at conventions all the time. As do many of these actors you see in Star Wars. Not the main cast, of course. We're talking about the characters that either are on screen for more than 2 seconds or who have one line of dialogue.
And sadly, we're starting to lose some of these actors. I believe it was last week.
Ooh, Tarzan yell. Gross. Sorry.
Porkins died.
I know. We lost Porkins.
And we just had another death.
Was it Admiral Piet?
We'll come back to that momentarily.
Ah, yes.
Talking some more.
Yes, we like the talking. Now, the thing about the Kashyyyk battle is it's pretty. And maybe that was the sole intention of the motivation behind the scene. Kind of like one could argue that in The Phantom Menace that the pod race is an excuse to make a video game.
Oh, but, most definitely. And not just one, but two.
Yeah. And, of course, that's one of the key scenes, one of the best scenes, one could argue. I mean, one of my favorite scenes in the movie. I mean, I skip right to that. That and the Darth Maul battle.
Yeah, to jump ahead, the Darth Maul battle is what the end battle in this film should have been.
Mm-hmm.
But since they're still talking and wasting valuable time, I'll come back and say it was John Hollis who just passed away, best known as Lobot from Bespin in The Empire Strikes Back.
You know, when I walk around with my Walkman headphones on, I look like Lobot.
Died on October 18th in London due to natural causes.
Hey, that's the way to go, man. Natural causes. Poor guy didn't get to speak either. Of course, Jango Fett reprising his role as the clones. He had to like that. Of course, you don't see one inkling of his son, Boba. You don't see Han Solo as a kid either. I'm just wondering, would that have been just too much?
For me, it would have just really put me over the top.
Yeah.
Too much of a tie-in.
But something they did get right was to avoid the boring, boring political struggle and the Trade Federation and all that. It's like, who cares?
Back in Force Vision.
And there's Anakin playing with his PSP. Or is it a Game Boy? I don't know.
The furniture looks so ungodly uncomfortable.
Yeah, I mean, did they have an IKEA there, maybe? I don't know. It's as uncomfortable as the dialogue. So it's a perfect fit, you see? Yeah.
It's a theme.
They walked into a furniture store. It's like, you know, a furnished set. We don't really live here. We just walk around in it. I want more. More?
I'm just imagining an accident in three dimensions as I'm watching out the window. Wouldn't be your typical traffic jam, that's for sure.
There should be a window washer. You know, like... I'm sorry, window washer droid. Yeah.
Something to break up this awkward moment.
More touching.
You know, and again, you
touching
know,
his boobies in, there.
In this, yes, although it takes place a long time ago, but they're very technologically advanced, where Anakin can get his arm replaced, but they can't do a damn thing about this giant gash across his forehead.
Nope. You get a scar, buddy, you're living with it. Oh, back to the lime green Slurpee planet. Imagine if that were like how airports were like, how impossible it would be to land. Domo arigato, Mr. Roboto.
Tomo. Tomo.
I like this dude. He's played by Bruce Spence, who is best known as... Wait for it. Gyro Captain from Mad Max The Road Warrior. And he was completely wasted as Train Man in Matrix Revolutions.
And he really took this role to heart. I mean, he really wanted to make sure he got into character as deep as he could. Very passionate about his portrayal of his characters.
I think he's one of the most striking-looking characters in this movie. I think that's hats off to the costume and makeup department right there, because...
And one glance at his teeth tells you he must be British as well.
Yeah, I'm thinking. Well, let's see. He was, Mad Max and Matrix were shot in Sydney. I think he's Australian, actually. But.
And if you watch some of the web documentaries for Episode 3, you'll notice that he had a real difficult time delivering his dialogue with the false teeth on the top and bottom. And if you watch that scene again very carefully, you'll notice that he only has the false teeth on the top, and the bottom are his natural teeth. That's the only way his tongue could perform to pronounce the words.
And I'm assuming that he probably looped that in post-production, probably came in and re-recorded his dialogue over the scene so it wouldn't sound like he's talking with a set of falsies, you know.
Slobbering, drool dripping off his chin.
No, yes, General Grievous is on floor 13 watching us right now.
Come on down to the rodeo, everybody.
And, you know, this was a big complaint that I had when I saw this during the theatrical release. The CG on this lizard just doesn't do it for me. It doesn't have that realistic element like the background does and the ships do. It's just something that really seems to stick out on the scenery. Maybe it's just me being overly critical.
Well, his sound actually annoys me. And, you know, Ben Burtt is a genius sound designer, but he kind of missed the mark on that creature there. Just like, oh, just shut up. I hate the way this creature sounds.
Oh, and here I was ready to download that as my ringtone.
Oh, don't you do it, dude. I think you should have General Grievous coughing. That would be a good ringtone.
I love the Trade Federation guys. I love the way they deliver the dialogue. I just love that dialect.
What, the bad English?
Oh, it's awesome. It's so awesome.
Okay, everyone get up from your tables. Let's go eat. What's for dinner? Ben Kenobi thinking.
Deep in thought.
That's right.
Better strip down a little bit. Let me show my target gear.
Ah, General Kenobi, we've been expecting you.
So cordial to, you know, address him in the very proper way.
Yeah. Oh, careful. He's going to poke your eyes out. Don't.
You know, someone's going to pay for that. And the Jedi, they're just so callous. They don't even consider these things.
Yeah, to suddenly become Kevin Smith here, who's going to pay the bill for all this damage, you know? And are these droids union? Do they get full medical benefits?
They get full metal benefits.
They fall totally. Ba-da-ba-ba-da-ba-da-ba.
Grievous is time to shine.
Yeah. Go, Grievous. It's your birthday. He's going to poke him in the eyes. Uh-oh. This moment here when he's spinning the lightsabers reminds me of Maximilian, the great robot from The Black Hole, that Disney piece of crap answer to Star Wars from 1979.
I was waiting for him to spin with so much velocity, he started to hover like a helicopter.
He might as well. It's a cool little battle here.
Can I give you a hand, Grievous?
Chris, I guess you could argue this, and many people did, regarding, like, sorry to bring it up again, Matrix Reloaded. You know that Neo's the one, so, you know, nothing can stop him. Well, you know that Obi-Wan Kenobi is not going to die. He's not going to lose any limbs. So how dangerous are these confrontations really in the end? You know, you really just kind of have to kick back and go, oh, well, it's an excuse for good fight choreography.
Dead clones!
Snake eyes.
Very cool.
Love the zoom in, too. Very nice.
And Ewan has such pretty eyes.
Stop in the name of love. Love this little centipede maneuver. And hey, I gotta get me one of those.
I was just thinking that. Sure you can finance that for 30 years.
Sure. That and the tumbler from Batman Begins. Whee! Bowling for clones.
I love this droid that gets, oh yeah, crunch.
But it's okay because he's a clone, right? No actual people were harmed in the making of this film.
The Willem scream.
Yeah. Giddy up, giddy up!
It's a pretty ballsy lizard there.
Yeah, he must have a death wish to go something at a 90-degree angle.
You know, Obi-Wan, after all the bitching you did about Anakin, this lightsaber is your life, and there he is, dropping it. What a freaking hypocrite.
Totally. I expected that trooper there to just fire up the laser, fire up the lightsaber and start kicking ass with it, you know?
Or, you know, throw it up on eBay.
Hey, can you sign this? It'll be worth more. Ah, yes. Mace being pensive.
I'm just waiting for, you know, some Pulp Fiction dialogue to come out of that mouth.
He's got the lightsaber that says Bad Mother on it. When I see that Jedi Master there, Ki Adi Mundi, I think of Andy Dick, who played him in the MTV spoof. And it was so funny that he has now totally shadowed the character that he was parodying.
I was just thinking it's nice that the Jedi are equal opportunity employers, you know. No thought of race or religion.
Hey, Chancellor is playing a good game of Battleship there, and Anakin comes in to disturb him? How rude.
He's got a lot of controls there.
Gotta wonder.
Oh, I'm wondering.
Is it like a Windows Media Center type thing, or is he air traffic control?
Even the Chancellor has to get a day job.
And that sucks. I thought as a politician, you just go around spouting crap and get paid for it.
Yeah, you caught me. You got me. Got me over a barrel. Guess I better come clean. Everybody's very touchy-feely.
They are. They love the hands-on approach. Let me tell you more about the Force, because I am British and evil. I do like his robe, though. Very nice.
I like that art piece behind him. That's very cool.
I want one of those in my apartment.
And you know, in reality, that's like styrofoam and paper mache.
Yeah, it looks a lot more than that, but you watch from the documentary, as soon as they're done shooting, they tear these sets down. So whatever is real, they...
literally shed a tear when I saw them just ripping these sets apart.
Yep.
Well, you think, you know, this film costs well over $100 million to make. You've got to recycle at every opportunity you have.
And everyone's probably circling the set like vultures going, how much money could I get on eBay if I walked away with just, like, a little inch of this set?
Well, you know, a lot of the scenes they shot over in Africa, a lot of the Tatooine scenes, they left a lot of those set pieces there, and a good majority of them did end up on eBay. The moisture evaporators and whatnot.
Man.
Now again, you know, to bring back the point you made regarding Obi-Wan, you know Anakin's not going to skewer Palpatine through the throat or anything because he wouldn't be around in you know, the classic trilogy.
Right.
I'd like to, but I won't.
But I got better things to do.
I'm still a wuss at heart.
Oh, he's chewing the scenery now. Look at that. Oh, it makes you stronger. Oh. I'm going to
turn you in. This is so junior high. I'm telling your mom. I'm like, does he look like he wants to laugh?
Yeah.
Like, just biting his tongue.
You're right. You're looking like if the shot went for 10 seconds more, you'd see him cracking up. Meanwhile, we're chasing Grievous on his Harley.
I do like the pacing of this film because for every 10 seconds of bad dialogue, you get 30 seconds of kick-ass action.
You do. You do. And that's the film is such an interesting dichotomy. You know, you've got so much you got the bad stuff, but you got the good stuff not too far behind it. So you know you can suffer through the bad stuff to get to the good stuff.
There it goes. I guess you won't be financing that, Kyle.
I guess not. Wonder if he had Geico. And Obi-Wan was riding a gecko. Thanks, he'll be here all week. Ooh, good thud there. That had to hurt.
The fall looks really natural. I think about that when I watch a lot of other movies where they're getting yanked from the hydraulic ropes and whatnot, and it looks so fake.
Right.
This is the stunt coordination is so very well done.
Yeah.
I love that.
Whee!
You know, and again, to bring up a classic trilogy moment, I think about Obi-Wan explaining the lightsaber to Luke and about how graceful and elegant a weapon it is, not as clumsy or random as a blaster. And here we see Obi-Wan, you know, totally going back on his word, but not really going back on his word because it happens before he talks to Luke. So it made him kind of like a BS artist when he was talking to Luke.
Oh, yeah. So he has the quip right here, you know. Yep, so uncivilized.
And there you go. The end of a perfect throwaway character.
Depressing. He joins the ranks of Darth Maul and, well, Boba Fett.
They're talking again.
Uh-oh. Here's a chance
for
that's right. The chance for a great actor like Sam Jackson to sound bad, and bad as in not good.
Now, if you look in the background, you see two characters,
mm-hmm.
And the first thought that goes to my head is, as random and obscure as those characters are, at some point Hasbro will release them as action figures.
Or they're going to tour the convention circuit and charge exactly. $20 for their autograph. It's like, who were you in Star Wars? I was in the background of that one scene.
Totally blurred out and obscured in the darkness.
I look like I was a construction worker hanging lights or something.
But you know what? In reality, you and I both would kill for that claim to fame.
Oh, yeah. Could die a happy man saying, yes, I was involved with Star Wars in some capacity. Of course, you see the end of that scene, and, you know, he just informed Mace about the connection. He says, okay, well, we got to arrest him. But he gets on the ship, and all the other Jedis are already there waiting with him on the ship. How'd they know?
I think they were going to go hit a club or something, and like, oh, change of plans.
Yeah. Not going to be Raven tonight, fellas.
Yeah, it was goth night. Damn.
This is the infamous looking scene. The montage of serious looking.
You know, she hangs around the apartment all day, eating bonbons and watching soaps. What's with the getup? You know, why not just throw on some sweats or something?
You'd think. I guess they don't have sweats back then. Do some aerobicizing.
You know, right before this scene started, Anakin was sitting in Yoda's chair, just, you know, to get that feel. Ha! Who's the master now?
Is there a Bud Light in there anywhere? You see one? In the skyscrapers? Guess not.
It's all too fast for me.
Oh. So we'd have to pause the DVD and just start analyzing the skyscrapers and see if we could find something. But
at least they're not talking.
They're not
they're
talking.
Emoting, but they're not talking. His crying always looks so BS to me.
Yeah, when you use those glycerin tears, they always fall from the wrong part of the eye, so that's how you really know they're fake.
And in the end, you know, I kind of lost a lot of respect for Vader in the classic trilogy, because I'm like, wow, what a wuss you were. You cried over everything.
He's just in touch with his feminine side. So things get really interesting here. Very nice scene.
The power of Christ compels you.
Ooh. Remember seeing this moment in the trailer, the teaser trailer, and it just got chills. It's like, this is going to be cool. But, you know, these Jedi Masters don't put up much of a fight.
The power of the Sith.
I guess, yeah. You're dealing with a Sith. He's some serious... Pretty serious. Pretty sidious.
You know, and again, I believe it's in one of the web documentaries. They talked about how they had to film a lot of these scenes and close-up between Ian and Sam Jackson, because he isn't that good a fencer. You know, he isn't very knowledgeable of how to use a lightsaber, so he had to keep the shots really tight to really keep from Ian embarrassing himself.
Ah, I was noticing the shots are usually pretty tight, and they're probably, you know, using CG to stick his face on the guy there. That's obviously not a person there flipping around, but you do have the tight shots and
clean up aisle two.
Yep. Can't trust you boys to behave for 5 seconds. Go break in the windows.
That's gotta suck.
Boot that to does. The face. You know?
Kinda looks like he's, you know, gotta go to the bathroom really bad. Anakin on his approach there is like, oh, gotta finally grab her.
Must pee, yet cannot.
No.
This no. I hate this.
No. You must not.
That's just craptacular B-movie dialogue.
Yes, it truly is. But good old Ian, just having fun with it.
You know, you would think that if you noticed the Force Lightning was jacking up your face, you would stop doing that.
I guess he's just so darn evil, he just doesn't care. I mean, you're not going to get laid looking like that anyway, so...
True.
When you start messing with the wind, dude, then you end up looking like a reject from the Thriller video. Come on. Yeah, I do expect John Travolta to walk in and stand next to him.
I wonder if Padme knows how bad Anakin needs him.
Yeah, I wonder. Why the obsession with hands being chopped off?
Makes you wonder if something happened in Lucas's childhood.
Yeah, he had a car wreck when he was a teen, and he was almost... See, there's... Look at those great teeth there. Oh, God.
Damn Brits.
Yeah. But, yeah, he was in a pretty serious car wreck as a teenager, and you gotta wonder, maybe he almost had his hand amputated or something, you know. So I guess American Graffiti was pretty much him growing up. God knows what Star Wars is.
That was a bad acid trip in the 60s.
Yeah. He kind of looks like a butthead, literally. He has a butt on his head.
And it's not helping Anakin's urge to use a toilet right now.
No, he's really got to go. Because he can feel the Force flowing through him. Come on, Ian, put the hood on. You're not looking good right now.
And again, you know, another common fan complaint that Anakin's switch to the dark side is relatively quick.
It is. Kind of like Indiana Jones. Everything that made Indiana Jones who he is happened in one day on a train.
Now, you know, it makes me wonder, too, did he already, like, have that name in reserve? I'm losing my apprentices left and right. You know, Darth Maul, Darth Tyrannus. So he's got a little index card in his pocket. Next, Darth Vader. Oh, you shall be Darth Vader.
That's right. There is just a reserve list somewhere in his mind. Maybe that's what he had at his control panel. He was coming up with Darth names.
Yoda had some bad Mexican, too.
I think he's feeling a little incontinent right now. Well, old Palpatine may be old, but he's got his hair. And what a hairdo it is. There we go. Yes, drape that hood.
Better.
That's classic Emperor right there.
His look is just so intense. It's giving me a chill.
Love it.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. That's the New England weather. My apologies.
Oh, yes. It's actually a little chilly in Cali right now as we record.
I actually noticed the glow of the engines and all the ships, but I don't see anybody using headlights. That can't be very safe.
How do you actually maintain a traffic lane? Because, look, they're all kind of in lanes, but they're non-existent lanes.
I wonder what the insurance rates are in Coruscant.
Probably really atrocious. No
such
thing
as see Palpatine driving.
Yeah, there's, like, no such thing as, like, countrysides or oceanside property.
I think that's what the war is all about. You know, Palpatine just wanted to see some scenery, so they might as well take over the universe.
Yeah, why not? Well, he was watching Pinky and the Brain, and that kind of inspired him.
Any second now, Anakin's going to go, "Narf!"
But Emperor, where are we going to get a monkey at this time of day? And now we have a marching scene. Everybody march! Hoot, two, three, four.
Well, you gotta admit, probably one of the coolest yet darkest scenes in the film.
Oh, yes. This is where you finally come through and get some emotion. And it works. Well, it's cutting back to the lime green Slurpee planet.
Well, there was too much talking going on. They had to get back to the action.
I know, yes. I like this move right here, this trooper. Right on top, right in the eye. Whoa! This lizard's still alive.
I think he's got the hiccups. In the middle of a battle, yeah, I'm going to take my helmet off so that I can emote.
Well, for those trivia hounds, Commander Cody there, the name is taken off another cliffhanger serial from the 50s, and I forgot what the name of it was, but he kind of looks like the Rocketeer. He has this metal helmet and flies with a jetpack, and his name was Commander Cody.
I was having a discussion with a fellow fan last night, and we were wondering what orders 1 through 65 were.
Yeah. You got Order 66 to exterminate the Jedi. Was 55 like catering? I don't know. Lizard's not going to make it through that.
I'm thinking not. Or if he does, that should have cured his hiccups.
Here comes Andy Dick.
Oh, but not for long.
It's almost like Hoth, but not really.
Just looking for the Nike emblem on their shoes.
Yeah. Yet another marketing crossover. This planet looks like something out of a video game.
Kind of reminds me of Alice in Wonderland. I'm waiting for the giant caterpillar with the bong.
Actually, it looks like the game Rayman.
You know, it's just a shame when the hottie Jedi is going to die, too.
Yep. Okay, you got her, guys. I think she's dead. Hello?
Yoda's indigestion again.
Yep, there it goes. But at least he's got his Wookiees nearby.
Did it all for the Wookiee.
Yeah, the Wookiee. Yeah. This guy didn't even get to talk.
And no Jedi put up a good fight. I'm really disturbed by that.
Yeah, really. Kaboom.
Oh, you know her insurance just went up.
Oh, 1,000-fold. I will admit, it was nice to see Kashyyyk again. It's been a long time since the holiday special.
Is it ever too long?
Yeah. I like the green infantry fatigue-looking troopers here.
Admittedly, probably one of the best scenes in the movie.
Ooh, yeah.
Don't go losing your heads, guys.
Don't mess with the Yoda Meister. It's a free
on Dasher,
ride.
On Prancer, on Donner.
On Chewie. Dark, disturbing. I'm a parent. This hurt. This just hurt. It's just, wow, he's cold.
I was just so disappointed the scene ended there. And no, I'm not a parent. Younglings roasting on an open fire.
Palpatine nipping at your nose.
She just got her bill for her Coruscant insurance.
I think so. It's all downhill from here. Meanwhile, it's time for Jimmy Smits to save the day on a very special Law and Order. Or the West Wing, or whatever he's on. Hey, are these guys actually in uniform, or are they CG too? Because you're so used to so many of the clones being CG.
From what I understand, there were no real clones in the entire movie, that every single clone was CG.
Oh, wow. There's Jet Lucas there, ladies and gentlemen.
There he was, ladies and gentlemen.
There he was, yes, exactly. He's the reason Jar Jar exists, or at least his name exists. He came up with that stupid name.
Back in the Batman utility belt with that.
I know. Like, you have that little breathing mask thing. What if you lose that?
I got a breathing mask, but nothing to help him ascend the wall.
I like these precursors to the AT-AT walkers, the AT-STs or whatever. Except they're kind of lacking a top. You know, so not quite all terrain. If it's raining, you can't see anything. But again, this goes back to logic. Who needs logic? You just need something that looks cool. It's Star Wars.
Shouldn't he be buckling up for safety?
You'd think. And what are those two really saying right there?
They're saying, we may have lost the battle on this planet, and Yoda's taking off, but there's good news. I just saved a bunch of money on my car insurance.
Yay!
Gotta love this classic throwback. This is actually one that doesn't really bother me.
Good old ship from the opening of the OT, the old trilogy. Captain Antilles' ship. Oh, yes. Drama, drama going on. Big things. Amp up the stakes. Okay, Kenobi. Do it to it. Out of here like Vladimir. Meow. Kind of wonder if holograms cause a slight disturbance in driving.
I was thinking their holograms get better reception than my cell phone.
But you know, if you're going to get a hologram in the middle of driving, say, on Coruscant, you're going to wreck into something. Logic. We don't need no stinking logic. It's okay.
She can't believe that. Her emoting said so.
Oh, yeah? Well, his emoting trumps her emoting. So there.
It's the hair. It's got to be the hair.
It's always about the hair.
The hair speaks volumes.
Boy, does it. Wonder what old Hayden is going to do at this point. Is he going to do the convention circuit, or is he actually going to have a big career? Become the next Harrison Ford?
That was awful yet true.
It's a legitimate question. Natalie Portman at least has already has a career going, you know. She's going to be in V for Vendetta here in a little bit. Although without these locks. Shaved her head. How depressing. Goldenrod, just as annoying as ever. But at least they pared down his dialogue a lot, too.
To think, you know, the almost human-like qualities of R2 and his compassion and his loyalties, you know, to think that he could end it all right now and just take that cruiser right into a building.
That'd be fun. When I see how great this ship looks here, I wonder if Lucas is going to just go back and re-tinker all the old model effects in the old trilogy and just basically piss off all the old artists.
You mean like he has been doing for the last 20-odd years?
Yeah, pretty much. But I know that even Frank Oz will concede there's no way this walking scene could be done with just a Muppet. You just can't do it.
And it does look really, really good.
It does. They've come a really long way.
Look on Obi-Wan's belt. He's got blueberry and orange and grape.
He's got all of his Lucky Charms. I know it's supposed to be
hair.
So
what do you think Yoda has on under his robes?
Oh, I don't know, but I was going to say his hair looks more like cobwebs than hair. And I don't really want to know what's under Yoda's robes.
I'm sorry, it's just one of those things that keeps me up at night.
I'd like to know what they make on a volcano planet. What metal actually is so strong that it doesn't melt in lava?
My understanding is that they mine the ore directly from the lava.
Oh! Sucky-ass job.
Those are some big-ass crop circles.
They are, yes. Oh, look, I see Mel Gibson.
Now, you know, it's one thing to get holograms when you're driving, but to be watching TV...
What's up with that? Got ESPN, the sports scores going on there.
Distractions. Their furniture is made out of leftover clone pieces.
Yeah. That's where they channel it. That's why all the clone troopers are CG. They had to use the real piping and conduit stuff for the sets. More Budweiser bottles somewhere in there. So, Mustafar, is it everything you thought it would be?
Well, you know, this is one of those questions where you just can't answer it with a yes or no. You have to go into a long soliloquy.
Well, we've got a lot of talking coming up, so we might as well.
I guess the answer is both yes and no. It is a sight to behold, but I guess that, you know, you and I, being the ages that we're at, we had a very long time to ponder what the battle between Obi-Wan and Anakin would be like. And I think, probably, unfortunately, a lot of us drew our own conclusions.
Right.
And it was really different to see it on the screen, to see Lucas's definitive vision, because I don't think it's what we had imagined.
Yeah, and anytime you read or hear a story, your mind will always paint a picture more vivid and very different and very unique from what ends up on the big screen. And, yeah, that's true. I mean, such a legendary battle in Star Wars lore for decades now. And to see it, yeah, it's amazing to see, no doubt.
That was Yoda's most badass moment.
Oh, that was, absolutely, impaling the guy with it, yeah.
Just the brutality, awesome.
Good stuff, Yodameister. But, yeah, I would agree with you that the Mustafar battle is... Despite being beautiful and intense and the emotions there, it's still not quite what I had in mind.
And again, it's another one of those debates that, you know, people get very passionate about. It's how are generations who haven't seen these movies going to perceive them compared to people like us who grew up with them as, you know, not only part of pop culture, but part of our lives.
Yeah, it's hard for us being in the generation in our 30-somethings, and we're going, how can we relate to a movie that is catering to kids like The Phantom Menace? I mean, if you were 10 years old, would you think that Phantom Menace was as special as A New Hope was to our generation? I mean, it's hard to say. I can't put myself in that mindset. I can't say.
Right. I mean, do the kids of this generation hold the prequels closer to their heart because it was all firsthand to them? And do they look at the classic trilogy as old and being hackish?
Right.
Maybe a little too campy?
Yeah, an old movie, old technology. These are slicker. They're more polished. Yeah, I mean, I'm really surprised no one has remade The Wizard of Oz at this point.
Well, I mean, give them 2 years.
Yes, Tollywood is out of ideas, literally. But as Star Wars fans, you know, we all have our opinions, and we're all very passionate about it, and we're passionate about the movies and the universe that was created and everything. And ultimately, it's George Lucas says, you know, it's his films. He's not making it for the fans. he's there as a storyteller. He's there to tell the story.
So to go back to Sly Moore for a moment,
yes.
I'm just wondering, in terms of how the Screen Actors Guild works, if you don't have any dialogue, does that mean you just get extras pay?
You know, that's something I'd have to ask her, because she is Australian, and that, I mean, you know, this film, a lot of it was shot in Sydney, and the reshoots were done in England. So does it fall as a SAG project? I'm assuming so. I mean, people like the likes of Natalie Portman, Ewan McGregor, Hayden Christensen, they're all in union projects, I'm assuming, yeah. They're all union, so. Don't know if it, I mean, if you speak like one word, I think you do have to get paid at a different scale. There are different rates for everything. If you go to the SAG website, I think it's SAG.com, they actually have a page that breaks down the different rates for different types of projects. On-screen, voiceover, dubbing. It's pretty interesting. And the whole thing about dubbing is, you know, as Star Wars fans know that Gary Oldman was supposedly going to be up for the role of General Grievous, his voice. And I guess that fell through because of a SAG issue or something. Or I don't know all the details about it, but I thought it was rather interesting. You think he would be chomping at the bit to be on Star Wars, you know?
And then to find out that it was a decision that his agent ultimately make, that it wasn't even something Gary Oldman gets to decide on.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty bizarre. So you end up having the character designer ended up doing the voice? Or the sound, one of the sound guys, I think.
One of the sound guys who had done the temporary voiceover just to give George an idea of how the scene was going to work together. And he was like, boom, let's use him. Let's just cast him. And again,
right.
And this was confirmed, he didn't make any extra money for his role because he was already on the Lucas payroll.
Ah, there you go. Yeah.
But now he gets to do the convention circuit and really enjoy his claim to fame.
And he has. Actually, a few months before I left to move to L.A., I was in Dallas, and there was a convention, and sure enough, I forget the guy's name, but he was one of the guests.
They're talking again.
Back to the soap opera.
She's just always going to have something on that hat of hers.
What is with that? Can't she just let her hair down? I guess Leia never had her hair down either. She's always doing something funky with it.
Is her shirt made from Wookiee?
I think it's 100% Wookiee. What would PETA say? Well, that's it then. She doesn't believe him. Let's go home, kids.
Must fight him and kill him and destroy him and chop him into little pieces.
I mean, I'm sorry, I'm sensitive to your needs. Ooh. He knows.
Somebody been hitting that amygdala. Dead people all over the place.
Yeah, Lucas really took a lot of liberties with the display of carnage in this film.
Hence the rating. I've heard another homage to the Black Hole film was that the spaceship featured in the movie was on this Mustafar planet scene at some point. I have yet to discover where it is, though. So if anyone knows, email or something, contact the podcast. We need to know. I need to know this pointless information, okay? I can die a happy man knowing that.
I didn't know John DeLorean designed all of Naboo's spacecrafts.
Absolutely, and the cocaine is stored right under the left wing.
She looks like she knows that.
God knows Carrie Fisher did. Ah, that's the stowaway cabin. Built especially for stowaways. At least she got a new jet out of the whole deal. Now, this scene coming up was something that I hadn't anticipated. I kind of remained pretty much spoiler-free as far as this film goes. I was very bad about Phantom Menace, and I was almost as bad about Attack of the Clones, but the third time, I wanted to go in fairly unspoiled, and I did not really know much about all the battles in this film, so this was a pretty interesting one to learn about.
Unlike me. Checking the websites religiously daily for any clips or pictures or spoiler text.
Now, coming from that angle, Steve, do you feel that the movie experience is well, pardon the expression, spoiled by knowing everything ahead of time? Because does it set a preconceived notion of how things should play out?
I think with these films in particular, it's so visual, you really need the visual aspect to pull it all together, that no, it really didn't. Seeing it's an entirely different experience. And I liken it to people who had read the Lord of the Rings trilogy prior to seeing the movies. Yeah, you have an idea of what events transpire, but to actually see these events played out on the big screen, it's such a totally different experience.
Yeah, I never read the Lord of the Rings series. I saw the films purely as films. And of course, as most critics and fans will agree, Lord of the Rings is probably a Star Wars for this current generation. Its fandom is just as far and wide as Star Wars.
Now, this whole exchange here totally reminds me of the spoof on the MTV Movie Awards, and I can't watch it with a straight face.
Don't think I saw that one. Who was playing who in that?
I think, don't quote me, but I think it was Jack Black as Anakin. And they intercut it with the actual scenes of Natalie from the movie, and it's
nice.
Really funny.
Nice. More talking.
That means some good stuff has to happen soon.
And it does. They make up for this. But I'm better and all that. So there.
After years of speech therapy. See, there he goes again. Wanted to just laugh his ass off.
Here comes my favorite line. Come on, say it. Say it, Natalie. Say it. Say it.
You're breaking my heart.
Sting. Yep, can't go down that path. You know something I was kind of on, well, I can't decide if I was either hoping for or expecting. I almost thought, in a general story sense, there would be like a love tryst. You know, a love triangle.
With Obi-Wan?
Yeah, yeah.
So many fans have speculated that that would be the spark that would set him off, and I kind of look forward to that.
That, that would certainly... send a lot of people over the edge, I think. If you're betrayed by your best friend, mentor, and everything. And but that was never even hinted at on screen, so.
We will take off our clothes now.
But I'm kind of surprised even Anakin in his insanity didn't even accuse him of that, you know? Might as well just have just pointed out. It's like, oh, yeah, you were doing her. You know, you were. He's over the edge anyway. He might as well just throw everything at the wall. Something's got to stick. Freedom! Anakin, you're full of poo-doo. Uh-oh, democracy.
Democracy?
We're talking politics again. Boring.
So I just smacked my wife around because of all that political crap she's been spewing.
Yeah. It's okay, I've got my flashlight.
You will try.
Impressive. Most impressive. So what would have made this scene better?
Well, first off, too many close-ups. I think the close-ups, you lose the intensity of the battle. Oh, Yoda smackdown.
Oh, yes. Good stuff. I do like...
It's these really short 2-3 second things that happen that are like really the highlights in the film.
That's right. The parts are better than the sum.
Oh, most certainly.
Yeah.
As anybody who watched the Phantom Edit knows.
Uh-huh. And I would say with all the intercutting going on in that movie, definitely the Darth Maul fight was the best of the intercutting. Now, the intercutting between this fight and the Mustafar duel works brilliantly. These are both really compelling fights. So this is good stuff. I was asking you, Steve, for a moment. It's like, well, if the Darth Maul duel was better, was it better because it was a dual lightsaber?
I think it was better because, I don't know, it seemed to have more of an intensity. This, I don't know.
Yeah, once Qui-Gon bit it, that, you know, threw Obi-Wan over the edge, and he was just tearing at it, and that was just so great. And
I think it lacks the intensity because Obi-Wan's more on the defensive than on the offensive. He really doesn't want to kill Anakin. It's his brother. He wants to see him live.
Right.
So it's not really this very aggressive, one of us is going to walk away from this battle scenario.
True.
Where it was with Darth Maul.
Right.
Kamehameha!
Ah, yes.
Super Saiyan Yoda, I am.
My force is stronger than yours.
Don't move. I've got a flashlight, too.
And I think this battle here really redeems Yoda from the Battle of Dooku in Episode 2.
I thought that fight was entertaining, probably not on the level intended, but I sure did laugh. When he starts channeling the Tasmanian devil here, it's just, wow. And yet has to walk around with a cane. Oh, lovely choppers there, Palpatine. Well, at least the Jedi brush their teeth.
Apparently only the Jedi brush their teeth.
Yeah, everyone else is just like, hygiene, what's that? I don't know, maybe a dual lightsaber would have amped it up for old Annie there.
But yeah, to go back to what you were saying, to have both of these epic battles intercut, it's beautiful cinematography. It really keeps you on the edge of your seat.
It's so funny that, you know, we can complain about things that are so wrong about the film but are instantly redeemed by something cool. There's this back and forth. Stop in the name of love.
And again, I think that's where you really have to give credit where credit's due. And yes, storytelling is a large part of what makes Star Wars great, but the cinematics are just overwhelming.
There is no denying that all these films, regardless of story, is just beautiful eye candy. Total eye porn.
And it's done so much just to revolutionize the movie industry as a whole.
I really wonder what kind of projects Lucas is going to do after this. You know, I mean, I guess if he's working on the TV series in at least a producing sort of capacity, he wants to do smaller films, but what would that be? Would they still entail CG backgrounds? The lack of real sets? You know.
I really couldn't see him downplaying it that much. I mean, after, you know, essentially pioneering the industry to what it is nowadays, I couldn't see him really stepping back and doing another, I don't know.
THX 1138?
Well, I was thinking more like, you know, his earlier works, like the really, like, indie look stuff. I couldn't imagine doing stuff like that with the real sets and, you know.
I'll give Lucas this, though. I mean, He already kind of takes a jab at himself, saying, you know, I want to make the films that, you know, no one likes and only I want to make. He can afford to do that. They can be total bombs. You know, the guy's not hurting. He never has been. He's been rolling in the dough for decades, so.
And it's kind of the oxymoron that is George Lucas, where he is adamant that he doesn't want Star Wars to be his life, yet he has Star Wars to thank for his life.
Oh, yeah. No one's going to really argue that Howard the Duck is what made George Lucas.
Right, exactly.
Yes, folks, keep hitting. You know, don't hit stop on your iPod just yet. We're still talking. We're still here.
We're just allowing you to enjoy the action without us yammering through it.
That's right. I like that shot right there when the lava really starts blowing hard.
I was going to say, I think the greatest service we can do is to be silent during those really great scenes as to not detract from them. Now, I will have to comment, because this is something that I noticed in episode 2, and you just saw there Jimmy Smith's driving in the convertible. The windshield is so low, it comes down to about the middle of his chest.
Right.
And you remember, these guys are flying these space vehicles at high rates of speed. I can imagine somebody flicking a cigarette butt out of the vehicle in front of him, you know, and smacking into his forehead at 850 miles an hour. The logic in something like that just defies me.
Yep. Again, logic out the window. Look cool, go for it.
Now, as you and I have been talking about during this entire commentary, the documentary on the second disc, this is the scene that they analyze and take apart and show you everybody who was responsible for making it.
And I really liked that they showed all departments. I mean, even down to payroll.
Catering and everybody.
Yeah. All of Rick McCallum's assistants and everything. And, you know, Rick has to provide everything for George. And so he's got his own team of people. And
it's really amazing how, I guess, political it all is, where, you know, you have this hierarchy that everybody follows. George is at the top. He's the dictator. And then it branches all off into, like, all these different branches of government.
Right. That is a slick convertible, though. Guess when you're an Organa, you can afford that sort of thing. I really, really wonder what it's like to work, you know, for 3 years or more on something like this and then to see the final product for the first time.
Well, again, you know, it goes back to what we were just discussing. Everything is so compartmentalized that I don't think anybody really had the opportunity to see the sum of every little aspect that they worked on until they get to see that final screening.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got to be phenomenal. Now, again, I'm also compelled to mention one of the web documentaries that focuses on just how they made the lava in this movie. Mm-hmm. And that in itself was a huge undertaking on how to get the colors right and how to get the flow right and how to get the proper underlighting. Every aspect of every, you know, visual element is just so amazing. The lengths that they go to, the number of people involved, the man hours involved.
And then other things you gotta wonder is, like, how much money does a compositor make? You know? Or someone whose job is to digitize all the video footage for the day. I mean, what do you make on a project like this?
And these are people who put in, you know, 100 times more hours than Hayden and Ewan McGregor combined, you know? They were talking to the two gentlemen from the payroll department, and they said, "We are the first ones to get hired, and we're the last ones to let go."
Before this disc came out, the VH1 was rerunning When Star Wars Ruled the World, and Carrie Fisher was talking about when they first made the first movie, they traveled all the way to Europe, and they didn't have anywhere to stay. You know, it's like, where are we going to sleep? You know, the movie was on literally such a low budget, and the British crew were just going, you know, this film is just not going to work at all. And now look what it's become.
Now, as I was saying earlier about how I envisioned this battle, it just seemed so anticlimactic to have it end with that one swoop of the saber.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe it's just me, you know, getting old and being cynical, but it's certainly not what I envisioned. Now, as much as we've made fun of the dialogue throughout the entire movie, this is probably one of the most emotional scenes.
Yeah. I was going to say, this scene works. You really feel for Anakin here. I mean, he really pulls it off here, and you feel
I mean, after all he's done, you still don't want to see him succumb to this fate.
No.
And I recall when I saw this during the theatrical run, just the silence in the theater.
A refreshing change, you know, because when you got this, the people who are so cynical about this, the prequels. So nice when they get something right. But yeah, I was spoiler free when it came to this. I had no idea he was going to lose so many limbs and literally burn to the degree. Oh, that's just gruesome.
Yeah, certainly not for the children.
Yeah, George was wise to warn ahead of time of release that this is not for the kids. Of course, me, you know, as a kid, certainly I wanted to see gruesome stuff.
But I think it's because it's so realistic and it's during such an emotional scene that it just carries such weight. It's not your typical movie-type violence or video game-type violence.
Right.
It's rendered so realistically that it would still disturb me, you know, from time to time in a moment of silence. And in retrospect, you get this shudder and you're like, ooh, I can't believe they really took it that far.
Right. And this is stuff that is so polar opposite of the direction of the Phantom Menace. And, of course, I know that's by design in the grand scheme of things. You know, you have the story about, you know, Anakin being so pure and so good and everything, and now everything has just gone to hell.
And you do look at the classic trilogy in an entirely different light now. You do have, you know, even the slightest sense of compassion for Vader and the things that he does.
Right.
Very cool ship.
Love it. And I like that they got the shadow there this time. When you saw that ship land in Jedi, they forgot to put a shadow. I think they fixed it on the special edition, though, but... Burnt toast Anakin. And, of course, they didn't make a figure of that.
Now, you know, we saw Anakin combust being on the banks. Why isn't Palpatine engulfed in flames right now?
I guess Uber fanboy would argue that he's using the Force to protect him.
Potentially so.
They have a hospital in the middle of an asteroid field. How convenient.
Not just that. Yoda was able to get a replacement robe.
That's a good thing. I wonder if there's any potatoes in this asteroid field. Or a pair of shoes.
One of those big flea-looking creatures.
Yeah, the big sandworm dune-looking things. Time to spit out some kids. Ding! Okay, is this Coruscant?
I would be led to believe yes.
Okay, because, I mean, it does look like it, but it's also raining, and it's like, it's never looked like that before, so I don't know.
It looks almost like from Water Planet on episode 2.
Yeah. Yeah.
Keep all those bastards and grab an umbrella for poor burnt Anakin.
I know. Aren't the stretchers a little more advanced than that? Can you really just lose the will to live? Did Amidala die of a broken heart?
I was kind of bugging out more of the creepiness of the creature that was assisting her.
I wouldn't want one of those between my legs.
No, no, no.
I remember seeing, I did see the spoiler pics, like, shots of this from the set did leak out to like a British newspaper or something, and I did see that. It's like, I'm surprised that got out. Got out so early.
I love that crotch cover.
Yes, it is nice. She thought of the name so instantly.
Now, I wonder if we'll see those kids doing the con circuit, you know, 15 years from now.
Yeah. Oh, wait. We'll find out that the babies were CG.
Yeah, there you go, right? Frank Oz did the baby cries.
Yeah. Strict union rules. Sorry, kids. There's no SAG infants.
Yeah, child labor laws. This, I think, was, you know, pure fanboy bliss.
Totally. Look at that slick, brand new chrome. So new and perfect. Ah. Power up. Yeah.
Ooh. I get goosebumps on my goosebumps.
Heebie-jeebies.
You know, I'm looking at Obi-Wan here, who just get done with this epic battle and all pockmarked with flying lava particles. Isn't a very sanitary environment for him to be handling these newborns.
Not very. He's not wearing the scrubbies.
Guess that explains Luke's underdevelopment.
I'm thinking.
His whiny nature.
I'd like to know how much James Earl Jones came to come in and do, what, 3 or 4 lines and one of the most infamous no's of cinema history.
Yeah, you know, for all the great scenes in this film, to think that, you know, 10 seconds of screen time could almost destroy it as well.
Uh-huh. Because Vader looks awesome here. I mean, he just looks so awesome. Brand spanking new armor and everything, but... Oh, boy. We all know what's coming. We all know it's become legend.
That must have been where Grievous lived, you know, with all the smoke.
Maybe. Or maybe they CG'd the smoke, too, you know? Very cool. Very anime. Frankenstein moment! Of course, I guess it is realistic, though. No.
I wonder if George looks at that in hindsight and says, wow, that was really campy.
Or even James Earl Jones. Or did he just cash the check and laugh even louder?
That's pretty much what I think. He was like, yes!
Let me understand this straight. You want me to yell no?
Yes, but do it really badly.
Yeah. Mr. Jones, that was too good. Take 15?
Yeah. We need it to be campy.
Okay.
And since that no has gone on to great infamy in various Flash cartoons you can find on the internet and all sorts of great goodness.
Oh, shit.
Again, I'm quite disturbed at how uncomfortable all the furniture looks.
It does look kind of painful.
It's like sitting on a window screen.
But the wardrobe does reflect a little battle damage there this time. Wait, Qui-Gon is immortal? What?
Yeah, I think that's like probably one of the big disappointments in this film. especially when we had all heard the rumors about the scene with Qui-Gon speaking to Yoda.
Yeah, I wonder. Of course, that part about wiping the protocol droid's memory was something I kind of assumed all these years. It's like, of course he doesn't remember.
And God forbid Lucas leaves another gaping plot hole somewhere. I still want to know why Padme still looks pregnant in her death.
Well, I guess that's kind of realistic, because women don't lose that pooch right away. Takes a little time. Don't know why, but it does.
Not had children? I did not know that.
Well, I have. I gave birth to my daughter, and I can say that... Oh, no. But I guess every woman would snicker if she were just uber thin again, going, oh, yeah, right, she had twins, and now she's skinny again.
Now, for all the fanboys out there complaining, saying, well, okay, this is the end of episode 3, and 18 years passes now till episode 4, and it took them that long to build a Death Star, this is what I have learned. I have learned that that is merely a prototype, and that is not the actual Death Star that is operational in episode 4.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, it took them a long time.
Considering it took them another, like, you know, 4 to 6 years to build the second Death Star, which was, you know, 10 times the size.
Sure, yeah. And for those who saw the guy walking off screen there right before that shot, there was a young Tarkin portrayed by Wayne Pygram, who plays Scorpius on Farscape.
And again, someone who has this huge claim to fame and did not utter a single word.
That's right. He can now roam the convention circuit as a star of Farscape, and now a young Governor Tarkin.
As the only Tarkin, because Peter Cushing, unfortunately, you know, passed away many years ago.
That's true, yeah. Ah, yes. The hills are alive with the sound of Leia. It just looks like the Organas live on the Swiss Alps.
I'm thinking about these poor, literally poor, you know, moisture farmers in the middle of a desert planet going, great. Another mouth to feed.
He's going to grow up and want to just hang out at the Tashi station and play with some power converters.
And whine and whine and whine.
Aunt Beru sure is cute. What happened?
You know, I understand Jimmy Smits wanting to take the child home because him and his wife were incapable of having children, but... You know, tell me, is this freak coincidence that, like, both couples weren't fertile?
Yeah, I guess it happens.
Or was it because they got stuck with this child that they didn't procreate and have their own?
That's a whole nother can of worms. Birth control in the Star Wars universe.
We'll save that for a follow-up.
Yeah, we'll maybe let Kevin Smith handle that one.
Well, Kyle, while these credits are rolling here, I think it would be appropriate for me to ask you, overall, what is your summation of this film?
My summation is that, snicker, snicker, it's easily the best of the trilogy. I know that's not really going far to say that, but I really had a good time with this movie. I think it's a lot of fun. I love the dark tone. It can certainly be compared to the old trilogy in terms of tone as being as dark as Empire was, maybe even darker with all the amputations and deaths and everything in it. Interestingly enough, the film also has some of the entire Star Wars saga's worst dialogue. I mean, you thought some dialogue was bad in 1 and 2. This one had some real groaners. But at the same time, like we had said, for every bad moment, you'd also have an awesome, awesome action scene follow up not too far behind. So I am definitely very happy with the final product.
And I certainly have to agree with the comment you made about the parallels to the classic trilogy. I think that's the formula that really made this film work and really made it stand head and shoulders above the first two films in the prequel trilogy. It brought a lot of those elements back to us. And I think one of the big points, too, was in the first two films of the prequel trilogy, you lacked a main villain. You really lacked that really iconic evil figure. And to see Anakin turn and to take on the name Darth Vader and then later become Darth Vader in the suit, it's fanboy bliss. And I think that's, you know, something we've waited, you know, half a lifetime to see.
And we finally got to, and, you know, it's a bittersweet moment because now you realize that's it, you know. It's like, we're not going to get any more. Well, we are going to get more, but it's not going to be post-original trilogy. It's going to be more filler leading up to episode 4 with the TV series. But
right, which won't be involving any main characters.
Right, right. It's all ancillary stuff, so... I know as far as what's near and dear to my heart, the original New Hope and Empire are still way beyond this. I mean, just, I can't even really compare. But if you want to just talk prequel, this certainly, we should have just started maybe even with this one. This could have been an episode 1.
Oh, agreed. And... that's how I view it. You know, when I'm feeling nostalgic, I'll certainly put in the classic trilogy. But when it comes to the prequel trilogy, to me, this is the definitive prequel trilogy movie.
Yeah, see, with 1 and 2, there are scenes that I really like. And there's, you know, it's beautiful eye candy. It's great to show off in the surround sound. And, yeah, I'll still get kicks out of that. But as a whole, this one is the most cohesive.
I couldn't have said it better myself.
Oh, there you go. Any parting thoughts, Steve, as we wrap up our longest podcast ever?
Well, certainly our longest podcast ever. I guess we can let it out that you and I certainly didn't intend on going the entire duration. We were going to do it in chunks and piece it together later. But again, I just think it's really a testament to the film for us to sit here and I think it's really interesting for us to be able to sit down and enjoy this experience together and to be able to vocalize throughout the entire film exactly what we're thinking at that moment. So for that, I thank you for the experience.
Hey, right back at you, dude. And thanks to the great technology of podcasting that makes it possible for you guys to download this podcast via iTunes or whatever your favorite podcast aggregator is. Listen to on your PC or your favorite MP3 player. Pop in the DVD and watch the whole movie and do all that. Maybe we'll do it again sometime with other films. I don't know. You guys, let us know. We need feedback. We desire feedback. We thrive on feedback. And you can send your thoughts about this podcast commentary to thebigballbroadcast@gmail.com. Or you can leave a voicemail on our listener line. And that number is 818-574-3607.